I forget what I was thinking about buying. Was it a cup of coffee or something like that? And I thought, oh, I could save a little money if I didn't do that. And one of the lessons that Jared told us once upon a time is that if you are trying to prepare for your financial future, if you're trying to get ahead financially, yes, you shouldn't buy a $5 coffee if you can have a $1 cup at home. Little things like that. But he wasn't too exercised by those small, pricey decisions we make, he said, because too often we think, okay, now I'm being smart, but we don't pay attention to the big picture things like loans we have, the interest rate we're paying on those, or what our income is and what we can do to expand that. Pay more attention to that and you can enjoy your $5 coffee. At least I think I remember you saying something like that. Jared joins us now. Jared, am I sort of correctly remembering a piece of wisdom you gave us that it's maybe if you're going to devote mental energy to your finances, think about the big picture stuff and don't stress about a $5 coffee?
I mean, you nailed it. That's pretty much it. I mean, that's the subject of my book, No Worries, you know, which got published in January. You do not want to stress about the little things because the little things don't matter. It's the big things that matter. It's your house, it's your car, and it's your student loans.
Yeah. The best-selling financial author, No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Financial Life, is out now. You have an interesting piece now, too, about the next Big Short. What is a Big Short and what's the next one?
Well, most people have probably seen the movie The Big Short, about the investors that profited off of the housing crisis in 2008. It was a great movie. It was a great book by Michael Lewis. You know, it had Steve Carell and Brad Pitt, and, you know, you always want Brad Pitt to play you in a movie. I think the next Big Short potentially is private equity. We've had an explosion in private equity, I would say, over the last 10 years. It kind of made sense when interest rates were zero and you could buy companies at 4 or 5 times earnings. And now interest rates are 5% and you're buying companies at 10 or 12 times earnings. I think it's a bubble. Private equity has $8 trillion in assets, which is a significant percentage of what the public stock market is worth. So, yeah.
When you short something, you are buying an option to buy something at a later date when you believe the price will be lower. Something like that, right?
Well, you can. So basically, there's a handful of publicly traded private equity firms. There's Blackstone, there's TPG, there's Apollo, there's KKR. I would say those are the four big ones. Those are listed on a stock exchange, and you could sell short the stock. And basically, when you sell short a stock, you can't sell something that you don't own. So you have to borrow it. You're paying an interest rate. You sell it. You buy it back later at a lower price, and then you return the shares that you borrowed. So that's short selling. You could also buy put options, which I think is what you were talking about. You can buy an option to sell something at a specified price at a specified date. This is super complicated stuff. You know, kind of tough to go over in 30 seconds on the radio.
But if you short something, you're also betting that it's going to fail or do poorly, correct?
In both cases, you're betting that the price of the stock is going to go down, yes.
Bill Gates famously shorted Tesla, and boy, did that tick Elon Musk off. Because Gates said, I thought that your car company was expanding too quickly and that if nothing else, the stock price was going to drop and the company might fail. You could imagine at one point that might have been a reasonable bet. And Bill Gates put a pretty big marker on that. And it was a point of contention between those two billionaire geniuses is to this very day. But that's the game that you play.
Yeah, companies get a little touchy if you sell their stock short. And usually the touchier they get, the more likely that there's something going on. You know, I worked at Lehman Brothers in the 2000s, and Lehman Brothers was the target of a lot of short sellers, including David Einhorn. And Lehman Brothers had a CFO named Erin Callen, and she defended Lehman from the short sellers, and that obviously didn't work out in the end. The stock went to zero, and the short sellers made a lot of money. So,
Well, but then what do I need to know about that as an individual? Like, I don't know, I got mutual funds, I got a 401k somewhere maybe. So how does this impact me, the average citizen, in a minute? Jared Dillian, the best-selling author, is on with us. We're talking a little bit about his analysis of private equity. He thinks those firms are the next big short. So what does that mean then for me? I mean, I'm not a sophisticated trader. How will this boomerang around to me, Jared?
Well, this has an effect on everybody, really. I mean, first of all, if you own a business of any size, maybe you have $10 million, $20 million in revenues, you know, like maybe like an HVAC company or something like that, now would be an excellent time to sell your business. You know, you've made a lot of money. You can sell your business at a fancy price to private equity. Like, it's time to get out and, you know, just leave it to them. The second part of this, the second reason this is going to affect a lot of people is because private equity owners, when they own a business, they don't typically have the same relationship with employees that founders do. Founders will keep on employees for intangible reasons, whereas a private equity owner looks at the business as a number, they're trying to maximize profit, they're trying to cut costs. And if the private equity industry runs into trouble, we will see layoffs across the United States on a scale that we haven't seen in a long time. And the unemployment rate could go up a lot.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know. You know, I think the economy is in a decent spot right now, you know. But the thing is that because private equity owns so much of the capital stock, if we did have a recession and we got into a situation where private equity was liquidating these businesses over a period of years, what it could do is make a recession that was already bad deeper and longer. So even the financial crisis wasn't that long, you know, from the summer of 2007 to March of 2009, that was only 21 months. But I think that, you know, private equity liquidating could cause a recession to last quite a bit longer.
So if I own a business, you think this is a good time to sell because if I wait too long, those private equity firms won't be out there buying businesses. They'll be selling off assets. And interest rates are lower, too. Does that make it more attractive to sell a business now?
You know, interest rates are a little bit lower, not a lot. What's interesting is that since rates, you know, went lower by about 0.5% or 1%, the publicly traded private equity firms have gone up a lot. So, like I said, Blackstone, TPG, KKR, Apollo, they all went up 20-ish percent on this because lower rates are good for private equity. You know, all of these companies are bought with leverage. They're bought with borrowed money. So that's why lower rates is good with private equity.
Now, you describe these private equity firms. We talk about them a lot here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, usually when we're talking about tech companies and new software designers and chip manufacturers, maybe not chip manufacturers, but on the tech side, there's a lot of new innovation going on out there, and private equity firms often are funding these. But the way you were also describing it was these are the number guys. They'll come in and buy your business, and they don't care who's the vice president or the guy that's working in the shop. They'll sell off parts or sell off people, which doesn't sound very nice. That doesn't sound very comforting, does it?
No. And the other thing I'll say about private equity is that they, you know, they used to buy, this is back in the 90s or 2000s, they used to buy businesses that were very boring businesses that had stable and predictable cash flows, like a tobacco company or consumer staples or something like that, something that had very stable cash flows. Now they've moved out the risk curve into stuff that is a lot more cyclical. You probably heard that private equity is investing in the NFL, you know, for the first time ever. So they're investing in businesses that are very economically cyclical, which could subject them to trouble further on down the line.
How does private equity invest in the NFL?
The NFL just passed some new rules. They're allowing 10% private equity ownership. Actually, the other three sports leagues, basketball, baseball, and hockey, already allowed private equity ownership. And the NFL was the last one to allow these guys in.
So that a private equity firm would own a team or own a percentage of a team, I guess, huh?
Own a percentage of a team, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of that. What are they going to do, sell off a lineman? I mean, the...
Well, the funny thing is that they might be agitators for lower payroll, for sure. Like, I can see that happening.
I know. They just strike me as, and I don't know, maybe this is you, maybe you've got friends in the business, maybe you have been in that business, but they just strike me as vultures waiting for somebody to look weak, and then they swoop in, they make the buy, and then they don't care about the carcass. Persuade me that that's not true.
I'm actually not going to persuade you that that's not true. I mean, I don't like to use the term vulture. That's kind of pejorative. And, you know, to anybody who's listening who is a private equity person, like, don't take this personally, but private equity generally doesn't care what happens to a business as long as they get their money out. And that's the difference between a founder and an owner. It's really about time horizons. If you're a founder, you're building a business that you want to outlive you. You want it to last forever. If you're owning a business for 3 to 5 years, you have completely different objectives. You want to maximize profit in the short term and then sell it to somebody else.
So if you are that business owner, we have to wrap up this conversation, but we started it with you saying, if you're a business owner, this is a good time to sell. And you do you if you're a business owner. It's your life, your business, your money. Maybe you want to take the cash, but you do so knowing that those people that you've worked with for years will be in a different place when you do, right?
Yeah, generally the employees of a firm after private equity takes over are not too happy. So, and there's been a number of documented cases, large cases, small cases, where private equity did not have the expertise to run a firm in a particular industry, and it actually failed under their ownership. That happens quite a bit.
You've written a long piece about this idea. Is that at jareddillionmoney.com?
I actually have a separate web page for it. It's called shortprivateequity.com.
Short.
So if you go to shortprivateequity.com, you can pull up the whole research piece and read the whole thing. It's quite long. And that's my case against private equity.
Jared Dillion's the best-selling author. His latest book, No Worries, How to Live a Stress-Free Life, is also at jareddillionmoney.com. Thank you for your time today, Jared.
Thank you.
Mike Marr joins us now, owner and brewmaster at Buffalo Creek Brewing. October is the time for Oktoberfest, and boy, here comes another one this weekend. Mike, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today, John?
Pretty good. This is in Long Grove. Tell me about your business.
So, Buffalo Creek Brewing, been around for 7.5 years, specialized in German and Belgian beers, and we take it to the next level every year, the first weekend of October, with our Oktoberfest.
Yeah, you get 6,000 or 7,000 people out there for this thing, I hear.
We do. It is, I believe it is Lake County's largest Oktoberfest.
So what's a Belgian beer like?
So I'll first explain the German, because German is only 4 ingredients allowed, which are malted barley, water, hops, and yeast. And where Belgian, and the Germans, they're very strict on these are the German purity laws, and this is the only things you can have in there. Whereas the Belgians, they like to throw everything in the kitchen sink in the beer. And so you can use honey, you can use beet sugar, all sorts of different spices. You name it, you can throw it in there. So the Belgian side allows us to have some fun, where the German side is the stuff that most people drink.
Yeah, well, that sounds like the Germans and sounds like the Belgians. Talk about the flavor profiles then. So how would you describe German beers and Belgians? I know you said are spicier. I think of them as almost sweeter, but just talk about the flavors.
Well, the German ales, German lagers is what we specialize in. So they're going to be nice, clean, crisp. Some are going to be more malty than others. So like our Helles, it's a nice, clean, almost like a Pilsner, but not as hoppy. Mm-hmm. Our Bock, which we just brought back on, has got chocolate notes to it, but again, that nice, clean, crisp snap. Whereas the Belgians, we have our 42K on, which is it's a Belgian strong ale. It is 10.5%. It is a little sweet, but it's got that the Belgian yeast impart kind of like some spicy notes in there that make it pretty tasty.
Yeah, go slow on that one. What'd you say, 10.5%?
10.5%, yeah. We serve it in 12-ounce goblets.
And not the 16 ounces?
No.
So the Oktoberfest is this weekend. Can you just tell me a little bit about the event?
Sure. It's a family-friendly, free event. It goes on for 3 days during our normal business hours. We open up and people start pouring in as soon as we open, and then the food will start at 2 o'clock both Friday and Saturday, and at noon on Sunday. And then the bands, we got the Alpine Thunder all 3 days, and we have, and they start at 3 o'clock on both Friday, Saturday, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. And then on Friday and Saturday, we have the No Pants Polka Band. Oh, these guys are hilarious. But they get up there and they jam it out and they get the whole crowd really going. And, you know, it's zicka-zacky-zicka-zacky, oi-oi-oi, all the way through.
And this is at your location, Buffalo Creek Brewing in Long Grove?
This is at Buffalo Creek Brewing. We've tented the entire backyard.
So got it, yeah.
You don't have to worry about the sun. And the weather's supposed to be perfect again.
You got candy corn ale there, I hear?
That's coming next month. Or actually this month, I guess. It comes out the weekend of Halloween.
Yeah, okay. Well, it sounds like a fun business, and boy, what a perfect weekend you're going to have. It's the Buffalo Creek Brewing Company's Oktoberfest in Long Grove.
Yep, come on out. Like I said, no admission, and we got lots of beer ready to go, and Lager Lane is set up outside so we don't slow down.
Mike Marr is the owner and brewmaster at Buffalo Creek Brewing. The website's buffalocreekbrewing.com. Thank you, Mike.